Hey, everybody. Lots of fallout with Tom Brady and the Super Bowl. Is he the greatest of all time? Why is the left at war with nature? And what is driving their almost pathological urge to eliminate fossil fuels? I take your questions. You've emailed me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Is Trump going to get sworn in early March? All of that and more. Brought to you by all of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. At charliekirk.com/support, it is your place to be able to help us. Our team of editors, researchers, fact checkers at charliekirk.com/support. Check it out and get behind our program at charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Big episode, everybody. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
In 2020, hundreds of you guys, my listeners, took my advice and made the switch from your overpriced wireless carrier to PureTalk. What are the rest of you waiting for? If you're with AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, your family could save over $800 a year just by switching to PureTalk. You'll get the same great coverage, but because they use the exact same towers as one of the big carriers, you'll save a fortune. By the way, PureTalk is the top-rated wireless company by Consumer Affairs with the absolute best customer service team based right here in America. Sounds good. It gets better right now. Get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. And if you go over on data, they don't charge you for it. From your cell phone, dial #250 and say Charlie Kirk to save 50% off your first order. That's #250, save Charlie Kirk. PureTalk is simply smarter wireless. Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. Hope you're doing well. Welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show on radio stations across the country. As always, you can email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Super Bowl Sunday. I loved watching the Super Bowl yesterday. First of all, I was actually pleased it wasn't as political as other Super Bowls because, of course, now that Joe Biden is president, the Democrats control the Senate and the Democrats control the House, you can't actually complain about the problems happening around you or else they might actually get blamed for it. So I actually found it refreshing that it was one of the least political sporting events that I have seen in the last couple of years. There is still some narrative placement. There is still some typical NFL, BLM incorporated nonsense. But generally, it was a pretty enjoyable sporting event to watch. Now, full disclaimer, I am a massive Tom Brady fan. In fact, one of my earliest football memories is watching Tom Brady against the greatest show on turf, Marshall Faulk, Kurt Warner, and winning the Super Bowl, the first now of 7 Super Bowls. Tom Brady's been through a lot in his career, torn ACL, Spygate, the Tuck Rule, Deflategate, and yet he continues to win. So just give you an idea of how dominant this athlete is. Whether you like him or hate him, he has the most unbelievable track record when it comes to football in the history of the sport, by far. The most Super Bowls won by a franchise is 6 with the New England Patriots and 6 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than the most Super Bowls a franchise has. The most Super Bowl appearances by a player, I think, is a defensive tackle, 5 or 6 Super Bowls. Tom Brady has now been in 10 Super Bowls, winning 7 of them. He's 43 years old, and he's playing like he's 23 years old. In fact, I think Tom Brady is playing better now at the age of 43 than he was in his 30s. It's as if he slumped a little bit around 2015 and 16, and now he is back playing at a level that would have him drafted first overall in the NFL draft. In fact, some could argue Brady is better today than he was when he was drafted 21 years ago. Every athlete came out yesterday and said that Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. He is the GOAT. There is no one even close to Tom Brady when it comes to sports, when it comes to football, and he actually might be one of the most accomplished athletes of all time. However, never allow something that should be agreed upon, not challenged, and just celebrated for just, I don't know, an hour, for a couple BLM incorporated activists to take to Twitter and start complaining. You see, Tom Brady really irritates the leftist intelligentsia. Tom Brady frustrates the people in charge. Tom Brady is an open Trump supporter. Tom Brady came into the stadium yesterday not wearing a mask, but he was probably already tested for the Chinese coronavirus. So why that was such a big deal, I don't know. And the thing that bothers the BLM incorporated activists the most, in their own words, is that Tom Brady really represents racism. Bree Newsom, I'm not really sure who she is, but she's verified on Twitter. I believe she is a activist of some sort. She says, quote, "There's an enormous amount of racial undertones to this entire conversation about Brady being the best athlete of all time, in a way that willfully ignores black athletes, past and present, as well as the ongoing systemic discrimination against black athletes in the quarterback position." What quarterback in the history of the National Football League is even close to Tom Brady? Maybe John Elway. But John Elway lost two Super Bowls. Actually, I think he lost three out of four Super Bowls before winning back-to-back Super Bowls. Terry Bradshaw? I believe Terry Bradshaw won four Super Bowls. Not even close to Brady. This woman who said that is an American filmmaker, musician, speaker, and activist from Charlotte, North Carolina, Bree Newsom Bass. So when Tom Brady starts to get called the greatest athlete of all time, racist, there is no accomplishment in all of sports, except maybe Tiger Woods, oh, by the way, he's black, winning as many Masters as Woods has won, as Brady has won Super Bowls. Joe Montana was great. Joe Montana is not even in the same ecosystem as Tom Brady. Not even close. Mr. Producer is getting very, very angry right now. Producer Andrew is. And yet Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick, who has won, that's right, zero Super Bowls. Let me just say that again. Colin Kaepernick has a 0% percentage of winning Super Bowls. The only Super Bowl Colin Kaepernick played in was in the Harbaugh Bowl. Remember this, the Harbaugh? It was the two Harbaugh brothers playing against each other, the Ravens versus the 49ers. And Colin Kaepernick lost. Colin Kaepernick trending on Twitter because BLM activists can't stand the fact that someone that has discipline and works hard, eats correctly, never allows the media to misrepresent him, goes from one franchise to the other in the midst of a lockdown and a virus with a new offensive coordinator, a new system, with a Tampa Bay team that, Connor, can you check this? I don't think Tampa Bay made the playoffs last year. Like, not even close, right? They were probably like 5-7. I think they had Jameis Winston, right? If I'm not mistaken, Jameis Winston, the failed quarterback from Florida State University. Heisman Trophy winner, one or two overall pick, not a great quarterback. They were 7-9 last year. So Tom Brady takes a 7-9 team and leads them to win the Super Bowl for his seventh Super Bowl win. Now, if I were to list the greatest quarterbacks of all time, some people would throw out Brett Favre. You know how many Super Bowls Brett Favre won? One. You know how many Super Bowls Aaron Rodgers won? One. You know how many Super Bowls Peyton Manning won? Two. To give an idea of how amazing Tom Brady's accomplishment was last night, he now has more championships than Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, who won six NBA championships in the 1990s, won three, took a little break, and then won another three. Tom Brady now has seven championships, but football is considered to be one of the hardest to win more than one championship. It is brutal on your body. It's difficult to even get on a team that could be competitive. That's not to diminish basketball's difficulty at all. And so What's the response from the activist class on Twitter? It's racist to call Brady one of the greatest athletes of all time. No, you're actually the racist for continually trying to find race and controversy where it doesn't exist. This is a much deeper and more troubling point that I want to get into deeper about what we're looking at. Because of the incentive structure on digital and social media, there is this irresistible urge by the activist class to destroy anything successful that presents itself in front of you. Not to encourage, celebrate, but if you see any form of success, there must be something wrong with that. There must be a reason to undermine it. They must be cheating, or they must be a racist. And that cultural trend is very troubling, because maybe sometimes some people are able to achieve success by doing the good things in life, working harder, applying yourself, having better strategy, maybe just being a better athlete. There's no better feeling than finding your stride. Fitbod makes it easier to find the exercises, pace, and intensity that gets you better results by building a fitness program that continually adapts to you. Build the momentum you need for a strong start to the year with 25% off a Fitbod membership now through February 28th. No matter how tough your goals may seem, Fitbod helps you build and maintain the habit to get there with dynamic programming that learns from your past workouts and adjusts as you go. Get a strong start to the year with 25% off a Fitbod membership now through the 28th of February. A lot of people love this app. They say, I can pick my own workouts tailored to equipment and goals. In fact, I used it once and I really liked it. You know, as I'm overcoming my back injury, it's helping me stretch. It's helping me get my strength back. And here's what you got to do. You go to fitbod.me/Kirk because Fitbod understands that the path to achieving your best looks different for everyone. Their program uses data and analytics to help you build on your last workout to maximize your results. No equipment, no worries. Fitbod has bodyweight routines for those looking to get fit at home or on the go. Fitbod is super easy to use and even has the HD video tutorials to make learning new exercises a breeze. It integrates with other fitness and health apps like Apple Health, Fitbit, and Strava. Personalized training can be tough on the budget, but Fitbod is only $9.99 a month or $59.99 a year. Sign up now through the end of February and you'll get 25% off your membership. Go to fitbod.me/Kirk. That's 25% off your membership at fitbod.me/Kirk. Tyrann Mathieu, who they used to call the Honey Badger. I don't know if they called him that anymore when he used to play for LSU. I've never liked this guy. He's always been getting in fights. He's always a scrappy player that I think is just a dirty player. And so he got in a heated exchange with Tom Brady last night, pointing his finger right in Tom Brady's face. Tom Brady did not take kindly to that. And then Mathieu tweeted in a tweet that is now deleted, Brady called him something I will not repeat. Well, then speculation ensued on Twitter. It was like, well, it must have been something racially charged from Tom Brady. Well, then Tyrann Mathieu deleted the tweet because then he realized that Tom Brady was wearing a microphone throughout the evening. And so there would be no question about what was said and what wasn't said. And Mathieu then said, I thought I played as hard as I can today. Listen, Tom Brady's a great quarterback. I never really saw that side of Tom Brady, to be honest. But whatever, no comment. It's over. I'm done with it. Yeah, and you lost. But this is a bigger point, not just about Tyrann Mathieu, but I did want to make sure I mentioned that because he really frustrated me yesterday. But a bigger point that I want to make about how we react to success in our country. When an athlete or a musician or a politician achieves some form of success, and it might not, that person might not hold the ideological or political viewpoint that you prefer, and your first instinct is to destroy or delegitimize that person, then we have a culture that has been created that cares much more about seeing the powerful, not just the powerful, but the people that have engaged and earned success tumble, then actually wondering how is it that they were so successful in the first place. And this is something I've seen repeat itself through many different manifestations on digital and social media. And I see this on all the time, especially with teenagers and with people in college, which is that anyone that might succeed, There must be something wrong with them. Let's take them down. And social media makes it a lot easier to do that. And so instead of celebrating it yesterday, we now have seen the endless commentary from activists and people that have never created anything of value in their life to try and destroy Tom Brady. Let's get to some other news here. Let's get to this one right here. Of course, President Donald Trump is being impeached this week. So I want to go to cut three, Mark Meadows on Fox with Maria Bartiromo, saying that this impeachment process they're going through is totally unconstitutional. Cut three.
One is this impeachment process they're going through is unconstitutional. It's all designed for nine House Democrats to do two things, to get political vengeance and have a viral moment.
This is nothing more than political theater. And we've been through many times the fact that John Roberts is not even showing up for this impeachment trial shows from the beginning that the entire impeachment process is not constitutional. So then why are Democrats actually doing this? They need to keep a narrative going to protect their theft so that people do not wake up and question what they have actually done to our country and what they're not doing to help working people and to help the people that put them into office. Now, on our podcast tomorrow, we have Ken Starr, the great Judge Ken Starr, former special counsel who led the effort against the Clinton impeachment. He has said very clearly that he believes that this impeachment is unconstitutional. Just to give you an idea of how the Democrats have changed the way the rule of law operates in our country, you can now wake up on one day with a president with no impeachment proceedings happening and then go to bed that night and that president is impeached. Quicker than what it would be. A traffic dispute in traffic court takes longer now than what it takes to impeach a president of the United States. No due process, no representation. But why are the Democrats doing that? Well, maybe because they don't like the system that we have to hold people accountable. They actually don't like the current justice system. There's a lot of similarities between how authoritarians handle their system of justice and what the Democrats are trying to do. The United States Senate knows this too. The Senate knows that this is going to be one of the shortest impeachment trials ever. They're hopefully going to dismiss this. If they start calling witnesses, it's going to turn into a multi-week circus in the United States Senate. But they're doing this for another reason. They're doing this to set a precedent so that they can stifle and suffocate political opponents in under a day. Every new year, all you hear is new year, new me. That usually means you'll be picking up better habits or trying new things. And when you do take up a new hobby, it's even better when you have amazing audio that will make the experience even better. That's why I recommend wireless earbuds from Raycon. Whether it's following along to directions in the kitchen, binging a new audiobook while learning to knit, or powering through a new workout with a pumped-up playlist in your ear, a pair of Raycons can make any activity easier and a better time. Raycon makes great sound accessible to everyone. Their wireless earbuds start at half the price of other premium audio brands. And guess what? If you think having white stems dangling out of your ears look ridiculous, that's something you don't have to worry about along with Raycons. They come in a range of stylish colorways, but along with comfortable in-ear fit for a more discreet look. And they don't just look great. Raycons perform whatever you take with them with up to 6 hours of playtime, water, and sweat-resistant construction, and Bluetooth that pairs quickly and seamlessly. You've heard me say this all before, so if you still don't have a pair of Raycons, I gotta wonder why. Really, I'm wondering. Raycons offering 15% off all their products for my listeners. And here's what you've got to do. Go to buyraycon.com/Kirk. That's it. Get 15% off your entire Raycon order, so feel free to grab a pair and a spare. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/Kirk, buyraycon.com/Kirk. Why are the Democrats moving so quickly to impeach former President Trump? What is the motivation here? Maybe it hasn't always been about Trump. Maybe it's just that Trump got in the way. Maybe Trump represented a set of ideas that they want to make sure never come back into the American political discourse. Maybe President Trump represented a set of public policy measures that threatened corporate interests so severely, so significantly, I should say, from ending the endless wars to addressing the problems with immigration to challenging entrenched corporate interests. Maybe it wasn't always about President Trump. Maybe it's always just been about Democrats relentlessly pursuing power. What's very interesting about this impeachment process is how Joe Biden, who's the president of the United States, campaigned on just not being Donald Trump. And his inaugural address says that we need unity. And now his perverted way of getting unity is now allowing the United States Senate, going unquestioned or unchallenged from the White House, to impeach a guy who's probably golfing right now as you hear this broadcast. I have a working theory about Joe Biden that I got from Victor Davis Hanson, and I agree with Victor Davis Hanson completely on this, and I've built it out even further. But it's basically that Joe Biden has been ridiculed and mocked for the last decade. He says curse words when he shouldn't. He grabs people inappropriately. They make fun of him for having dementia. And I think Joe Biden, at some point, as he was getting closer and closer to actually being sworn in as president, said, you know what? I'm not going to live another 20 or 30 years, most likely. I can't remember where I am half the time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do what Obama couldn't do. I don't care about midterm retaliation. I don't care about reelection. If I have to chart a course to put America back into the direction of FDR, then I'm going to do it. I'm going to appease the professor class. I'm going to do things that will be written about nicely and fondly in the New York Times. I'm going to be known not as someone that just defeated Trump, but as someone who was more progressive than Barack Obama. If you think about that, if that's really what Joe Biden is thinking, that's chilling. It's Barack Obama, at certain times of his presidency, stood down when there was massive backlash, when there was the Tea Party movement, when there were oversight committees, when there was serious challenges to his power. Joe Biden seems disinterested in political consequences. Joe Biden seems completely and totally fine with governing with a leftist iron fist. On Friday, we talk at length. In fact, we did an entire show on one article. I encourage you guys to check it out on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. It's one of the favorite shows I've done recently. So we just took one article and we built it out. And it was the shadow campaign that won the 2020 election. One of the chief architects of that was a guy named Podrozer. Is that right? Podrozer? Podrozer. I'm sorry. I don't know. Tough name. From the AFL-CIO, the American Federation of Labor. The AFL-CIO did a lot to get Joe Biden elected. Joe Biden then on day one decided to defy the wishes of the AFL-CIO. On day one, Joe Biden decided to say, you know what? Thanks for getting me into power. Thanks for designing the secret conspiracy. Their words, not mine. I'm now going to side with the ideologues. Play cut 10.
In his first hours as president, Joe Biden announced that he was going to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. You think Biden realizes that that was a mistake, that announcement?
I think so, yes.
Did you talk to him about it?
I have not.
Why do you think he's...
And if I had, I wouldn't tell you.
So why do you think he has come to that realization?
Because the next time the subject came up, it was done the right way.
That is the head of the AFL-CIO saying that it was a mistake to eliminate all those jobs from the Keystone XL pipeline. So Joe Biden is left now with a choice. The choice is, does he pander to the corporate crony interests that got him into office? Or does he actually assess the greatest political threat and become someone that he actually might not totally be? I think Joe Biden is worried about what will historians say about him. Joe Biden being the nation's oldest president in history, I think Joe Biden is completely and totally ignoring his own calls for unity. He's the first president that I can find in the history of the country where one of his first acts of taking office in the first day of being president, he says, find me ways to kill jobs. Find me one way I can kill jobs. It's never been done. Only ideology can bring you to do something so foolish. Only. Not patriotism, not pragmatism, not loyalty to the nation, ideology. Only a commitment to a set of radical ideas could bring you to sign a piece of paper that would kill tens of thousands of jobs. So what is the priorities? What are the priorities of the Biden administration? Well, we don't know. Do you know what a press briefing would look like if we had an honest press? The moment Jen Psaki, Miss Circle Back, took the podium, there'd be a question that says, hey, why didn't we ever hear about Tara Reid? Why is Hunter writing a book when we have all these questions about China and taxes? Hey, why is it that Hunter Biden still owns 10% of a Chinese company? Whatever happened to that prosecutor in Ukraine? You say it's all subtle, but was it really? All these stories about the 25th Amendment, who leaked that? Is Kamala Harris trying to take over your position as president? These are just some of the questions that would be asked. Instead, Joe Biden gets asked questions such as, what's your favorite color? Or how does it feel to be president? What was your first meal as president of the United States? Remember, when the Democrats are engaging in political theater, they're almost always covering a theft that is occurring. So what is the theft that is occurring right now? Do you notice how little coverage there has been of the stimulus bill? You probably know the amount of the stimulus bill. Has anyone actually told you what's in it? It will go down as one of the largest spending bills in the history of the planet. And yet we're worrying about impeaching a guy who's a private citizen. What is in this stimulus bill? Would actually be stimulative? Who's paying for this? What are we going to do when we assuredly hit inflation? The lack of coverage around the stimulus package, the lack of coverage around anything happening internally in the Biden administration, paired with Joe Biden's commitment with pandering to the ideologues. That's starting to paint a picture here of something rather concerning. It's starting to paint a picture of a presidency that will be protected by the activist press and will be more ideologically radical than any other president that we have seen. More so than Obama, more so than Clinton, more so than Carter, more so than Johnson, more so than Roosevelt. Now, whether it's Joe Biden making these decisions or his advisors making decisions, we don't know. Do you remember what was going on in the Trump administration 4 years ago to today? By now, Michael Flynn had already been entrapped. He was entrapped in the White House without counsel represented with him, illegally by Peter Strzok, McCabe and Strzok, both of which have not been indicted, both of which now have nice, high-paying jobs in the District of Columbia. By now, Flynn had resigned. Trump had signed his travel ban, which resulted in lawsuits, which resulted in protests. I think KT McFarland had already resigned by this moment in the presidency. It was bedlam, intentionally. Reporters were following people, threatening them with potential stories that would link them to criminal behavior. Democrats were already launching internal probes despite controlling zero committees in the House around Russia interference. From the moment Donald Trump took office in 2017, there were massive internal disruptions. With Joe Biden, despite him going out of his way to destroy jobs, something that we've never seen a president do before, to actually say, hey, give me the paperwork to go and obliterate jobs against the people that helped get me into office from the AFL-CIO. Hey, can you get me that piece of paper where men can go in women's locker rooms? That's going to fulfill the mandate for me to govern. There are a couple checks against this, and one of them is the states. One of them is the coalition of Republican governors that can check against this sort of radical behavior from Joe Biden and his presidency. But the fact that there is so little coverage, no investigation of anything that's happening with the Chinese coronavirus relief bill, Biden's virus response, there's something else happening here. And it's usually a theft that's happening towards the American people. Let's get to some more sound here. We'll go then to some more impeachment sound. We'll go to Rand Paul saying that if Congress applied the Democrats' impeachment standard fairly, Schumer should also be impeached and put on trial by the Senate. Cut 12.
You know, I opposed the notion of, which I think was a misguided notion, of voting to overturn the election either with Congress or with the vice president. But I think if we're going to criminalize speech and somehow impeach everybody who says, oh, go fight to hear your voices heard, I mean, really, we ought to impeach Chuck Schumer then.
It's just typical political speech that is now being criminalized by the Democrats. We did an episode at length with Alan Dershowitz back on Friday about that. Let's listen to Chuck Schumer say something that I guess should now get you impeached.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price.
You have released the whirlwind and you have paid a price. Is that political metaphorical speech or is that incitement? Of course, it's just metaphorical speech. But under the new guidelines and under the new rules by the left, that sort of speech must now be criminalized. Let's go to cut 9, Senator Rand Paul, on how the Democrats' impeachment of President Trump is nothing more than a partisan witch hunt. Play cut 9.
This was a strong signal to all of us that this was going to be a partisan hearing with a Democrat in the chair who's already voted for impeachment. You think we're going to get any fair rulings out of a Democrat that's already expressed favor for impeaching him previously and is going to vote this time to impeach him? So it is a farce. It is unconstitutional, but more than anything, it's unwise and going to divide the country. If Biden thinks he really, you know, if he really meant anything about that unity and he really wanted to be a statesman, you know what he would have done? He would have come out and told his party, enough's enough. Let's move on. We won the election and let's move on with our agenda. But instead, they can't let go of President Trump and they're going to keep kicking and kicking and kicking.
And they can't let go of Donald Trump because they are completely uninterested in governing. Governing is hard. Governing takes negotiation. Governing takes results. Instead, what's the one excuse you can give to not govern? Well, to be at war. Winston Churchill famously said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that forever war interrupts decent society. Winston Churchill argued that if you are forever at war, then you always have an excuse to take away more people's freedoms and liberties, to be able to distract from having civil and decent society. The ruling class has always enjoyed having foreign wars, from Afghanistan to Vietnam to Iraq. Our military is the greatest in the history of the world. It is not a nation-building exercise. But when you're at war, then you don't have to actually justify a lot of your domestic decisions. Well, because we're at war. So mind you, do you see how the war language is used a lot in the last year? We're at war with the Chinese coronavirus. We're at war with racism. We're at war with domestic terrorists. In fact, there are people that are even calling them MAGA terrorists. Jake Tapper said that exactly. Let's play tape.
If there is no accountability and no attempt by the Republican Party to stop these insane lies that have taken root in their party, witness the support this week by the House Republicans for bigot and conspiracy theorist Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman from Georgia. If there's no effort at accountability, this is not going to be the end of MAGA terrorism. This will only be the beginning.
MAGA terrorism. When you're engaged in a conflict where you're able to justify the deployment of troops, when you're able to justify the erosion of liberties, then you don't have to govern. Ron Johnson says it best. Play tape.
I think we ought to take that fencing down and return to as normal position as possible. I think the fencing is remaining in place to send a signal, a narrative that 74 million Americans that voted for President Trump are dangerous to our democracy. They're all insurrectionists, and that's simply not the case.
I think Jake Tapper knows better, but I can tell you that there are millions of people in liberal America, Massachusetts and Connecticut and Oregon, that are actually terrified of conservatives because of the propaganda from the media. Remember, people who are afraid are easier to control and command. I want to get to a question here about whether or not I think Trump is going to get sworn in on March the 4th. This is a bunch of nonsense. It is all garbage, everybody. Stop reading these message boards that are telling you things that are pathologically untrue, such as Pence is in Gitmo, that Trump is getting a second term on March the 4th or 5th. It's not happening. All of those message boards were wrong the last couple months, all of them. So I'm just trying to warn a lot of you, disengage from that and find sources that do their hours of research like we do here on the Charlie Kirk Show. We do hours and hours of research. We call sources. We call people in Senate offices. We call people in congressional offices. We do our due diligence before we present things as fact to you. So I highly encourage anyone that might be following that sort of a narrative to just please disengage from that. Please. It's not happening. So there's a piece here in the Washington Post that I want to kind of break down. It's really important, and it has to do with impeachment. Now, impeachment is basically dead on arrival, but the narrative is not. And the narrative is going to try and justify a new security state. But the facts matter here. And we might actually be able to push back against a prevailing Democrat narrative that exists. And it's actually a very interesting contradiction here. The Democrats' narrative when it comes to impeachment is directly at odds with their narrative when it comes to creating a new Patriot Act. Their narrative when it comes to impeachment is that Donald Trump was the sole reason, the incitement behind the violence and the tragedy at the Capitol. This article here in the Washington Post says, quote, on the cusp of the impeachment trial, court documents point to how Trump's rhetoric fueled rioters who attacked Capitol. But when you actually read this Washington Post piece, and it's done somewhat fairly throughout, but then they actually end up contradicting themselves. I don't know who the editor is at the Washington Post, but a good editor would have caught this. For example, according to prosecutors, Pittsburgh QAnon supporter Kenneth Grayson wrote to an associate on December 23rd, quote, I'm there for the greatest celebration of all time after Pence flips the Senate. Or I'm there if Trump tells us to storm the effing Capitol, I'ma do that then. Now that looks like it's all Trump's fault that he did that. But let me read this again. He wrote this on the 23rd of December. This man came to D.C. with the premeditation to do violence. It says, quote, in the Washington Post, and some came primed for battle. According to Professor Alan Dershowitz, in order for incitement to be proven in court, it'd be one thing if President Trump was on the steps of the Capitol saying, smash windows, attack police officers, you got to do that. And even then, it would be a difficult case for incitement. The piece continues by having other factors of indictments and evidence. But the overwhelming part of this article actually talks about how people came with pipe bombs to D.C. We still haven't found who did the pipe bombs, by the way. They came in military gear. They had walkie-talkies. And look, we have, I believe, covered this more in depth than most programs. There were three buckets of people, three types of people that were there on January the 6th. Number one, people that came to Washington, D.C. looking for a fight. They penetrated the police barrier, the outer police barrier on the west side of the Capitol, while President Trump was still giving his remarks. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, according to the New York Times and the Washington Post. All of that piece of evidence pushes back against the idea that President Trump solely incited the riot. The second group of people are non-ideological agitators. The Sullivan guy from BLM Incorporated. The people that were trying to get others to commit acts of violence. They just, the young man from Maryland who was not a Trump supporter, according to all publicly available information, grabbed the hockey stick and just started beating a police officer. And then the third category of people were Trump supporters, some of whom came looking for a fight. Others flew to Washington on a private jet and made a foolish decision to go run into the Capitol building. Not all those people committed acts of violence. Some of them did. Those are the three groups of people that were there on January the 6th. So in order for the Democrats' argument to be legitimate, which it isn't, there wouldn't be that form of nuance. The Democrats will have to explain, well, how do you explain the people that were there simply and solely for the reason to cause violence? They can't. The one vulnerability in the president's defense, which is why I think the president is just going to try and argue against the illegal nature of the impeachment, not just about the merits of the case, is that the president said multiple times that he was going to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol with them. Does that make him criminally liable? Probably not. Does it make him open to potential criticism from these rioters? Probably. It says, quote, but for the president, they would have walked down, but if not for the president, they would not have walked down Pennsylvania Avenue. They believe the president was going with them. They thought they were going to help the president save our country. And that was reflected in certain indictment charging documents where they asked some of the rioters, they said, why were you there? Now, they might be using an excuse. They might be using the kingpin excuse. We've gone through this legal theory before, which is the boss told me to do it. The boss told me to do it. The boss told me to do it. Now that you have to apply that legal standard to facts and circumstances. The facts and circumstances are, do you have a connection to that person or are you just a fan of that person? So let me give you an example. An example would be if someone listened to the awful music of Marilyn Manson around death and horror, and then someone committed an act of violence, and you would say, well, the music talks about death and violence, they made me do that. Well, the facts and circumstances wouldn't apply to that at all. And it wouldn't apply it in this case at all. This is a Hail Mary legal strategy by many of the people that were involved on January the 6th. That's what this is. And if you walk through this article, it continues by saying, Samuel Fisher, who stormed the Capitol, posted on Facebook the day before, quote, at one when Congress certifies the election, Trump just needs to fire the bat signal, deputize patriots, and then the pain comes. Wrote that on Facebook. Not exactly a discreet way to communicate. The point is that that shows intention before the president's speech to go do something at the Capitol. The defense, I mean, the prosecution, which are the House impeachment managers, they are going to focus on the people that have cited the president for the reason why they did that. But because we have now entered the third world into a show trial, a Soviet-style show trial, that would make even General Tukhachevsky seem as if he didn't get a proper defense. If you don't know who General Tukhachevsky is, he's one of the generals that Stalin killed for no reason whatsoever, by the way, just because he felt like it. It's true. A good defense would say, hold on a second. Let's go through each one of your narratives. When did they leave the ellipse? When did they walk over? What was their intention? Did they post anything beforehand? That's the way a trial is supposed to work. Not this Soviet shock jock show trial. One of the amazing aspects of our constitutional republic framework is separation of powers. Is that not one person is going to have all the answers, that you need checks and balances on all power. The Democrats do not believe this. The Democrats are annoyed that there is a system in place that allows tyranny to be checked, that allows authoritarianism to be put on notice. Now, one of the aspects of this is supposed to be a fair and free media. That is a non-governmental check and balance on power. When Peter Ducey asks Jen Psaki about oil workers, who he lied to, she says, bring the evidence of those thousands of people who won't get green jobs. This is one of the greatest logical fallacies. It's how to prove a negative. Play cut 18.
Thank you, Jen. I do have a question on COVID, but first on energy. When is it that the Biden administration is going to let the thousands of fossil fuel industry workers, whether it's pipeline workers or construction workers, who are either out of work or will soon be out of work because of a Biden EO, when it is and where it is that they can go for their green job?
Well, I'd certainly welcome you to present your data of all the thousands and thousands of people who won't be getting a green job. Maybe next time you're here, you can present that.
What an arrogant, smug person. Is that fair to say? So let me get this straight. In order to just end questioning at a White House press briefing, Kayleigh McEnany, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Sean Spicer are like, oh, so now I just should have asked them where they're multivariant analysis is. It's very simple, Jen Psaki. He banned fracking on federal lands. He got rid of the Keystone XL pipeline, which is just so, it's so amazing to me. You know how foolish these people are? Get rid of the Keystone XL pipeline. How are you going to transport the oil then? By train? Probably. It's a nice handout to Warren Buffett and the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad. He's been a long campaigner against the Keystone XL pipeline. You still have to transport the oil. But the ideologues that are running our government now, like Jen Psaki and John Kerry, who benefit tremendously from fossil fuels, from fracking, they're going to get us into another war. Remember, war is a tool used by the tyrants to distract us from the theft that is currently occurring. What war are they going to get us into? Well, when you cannot transport, extract, or use the resources that you have on your own continent, then you're going to go find those resources elsewhere. And there's only a couple places on the planet that have oil and natural gas deposits like we do. And that's in the Middle East and Venezuela. That's it. It is not abundant anywhere else. But we have it here in North America. Fracking saves the environment. Fracking has created millions of jobs. So the question should be, Jen Psaki, show me the evidence anywhere where this supposed green nonsense has resulted in positive economic growth, lower utility bills, people coming out of poverty. But they don't care about that. The Democrats and the ruling class live in a utopian pipe dream. I would love to have Jen Psaki ask honest questions. And Peter Ducey did a great job there. He deserves credit for that. He's the only guy in the entire room that asks good questions. Hey, Jen, can you just take out a piece of paper and pen? Can you create a pie chart and show me, per type of energy, the different types of the percentages of consumption in our country? What percentage of our energy grid is solar? What percentage of our grid is oil, natural gas? What percentage of our grid is nuclear? What percentage of our grid is hydroelectric? What percentage of our grid is wind? And what is the specific scaling that you believe the Biden administration can implement to get us from what I believe is about 4% solar to 20% solar? How do you plan to do that? How do you plan to get us from 2% hydroelectric? By the way, they don't even like hydroelectric. I love hydroelectric. They don't like nuclear either. If they were actually honest when it came to energy, which they're not, they would say, okay, we are going to transition to nuclear and hydroelectric. Instead, it's wind and solar. I want to talk to you about how MyPillow has literally changed my life. They won't go flat. You can wash and dry them as many times as you want, and they maintain their shape. They're made in America. And for a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering his premium MyPillows for his lowest price ever. You can get a queen-size premium MyPillow for $29.98. Regular, it's usually $69.98. That's $40 of savings. Kings are only $5 more. Not only are you getting the lowest price ever, $29.98 for a queen-size premium, but Mike is extending a 60-day money-back guarantee to March 1st, 2021. So go to MyPillow.com right now and click on Radio Listener Square and use the promo code Kirk. That's it. If you want to support Mike and you want to support MyPillow, you will also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream bed sheets, the MyPillow mattress topper, and MyPillow towel sets. Or call 800-876-0227. Use the promo code Kirk. Mike Lindell, fighting for America. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code Kirk when you check out. Do you notice how little conversation there is about the $1.9 trillion economic rescue package? Do you even know what's in it? Is it necessary? Did you know that most of the money that we spent unnecessarily in December has not even been spent? That was a $1 trillion stimulus bill. That's according to Senator Tim Scott. We did another $1.4 trillion. This is on top of the $4 trillion a year we spend on the federal government. This stimulus bill, which is completely and totally unnecessary, has bigger stimulus checks, more aid to the unemployed, those facing eviction. I'm reading from CNN.com because they've actually done the best job detailing this. Enhanced unemployment aid, more money for child care and child tax credits. I think that's fine, actually. I think that we should have a pro-family policy in our country. Subsidies for health insurance premiums, restoration of emergency paid leave, more assistance for small businesses, and then $350 billion, here you go, here's the theft, this is why they don't want to talk about this, this is why they're doing the impeachment, to bail out Democrat states. Now we found it. $350 billion to bail out broken states like Illinois, Connecticut, Rhode Island, California, Oregon, and Washington. $350 billion. And it also raises the minimum wage to $15 an hour that the Washington Post has even come out and said will destroy 1.5 million jobs over the next 5 years. Democrats don't care about that. And so I am inherently against government stimulus. It does not work, and it is immoral. I was against Obama's stimulus. I was even against Trump's stimulus. I spoke out against it. It did not create the economic growth that they said it would. The best stimulus has always been ending these anti-scientific lockdowns, has always been about reopening our country. Open the country fully. Trust people to make good choices. They will weigh the costs. They'll weigh the consequences. That's what a free society is all about. We have decided not to do that in our country. We've decided to do the opposite. We've decided to shut everything down. borrow money and create money we do not have, to spend on things that do not matter, to never create jobs. But let's go just to the very basics. What is money? Money is a representation of value. The way that trading used to work before we had currency was a barter system. It was very inefficient. I'll trade you a chicken for a cow. I'll trade you cows for a car. The problem with the barter system is you have to find a producer for that demand. That creates the double incidence of wants problem. Learn Liberty has some great videos on this. The double incidence of wants problem is that if you have something that somebody else does not want, well, then you're not able to trade. So if I'm in the water bottle making business and I have a bunch of water bottles, but somebody wants sandwiches and not water bottles, how do I trade with them? Money also solves the retention of value problem, especially when it comes to perishable goods like chickens or cows. It's not going to last forever, but money hopefully will. Money can hold that value after you sell the cow. You get the highest amount of value for it when it's at its highest peak, and then you keep the money. Money solves these problems, and money allows trade to occur. What I just went through in the last 2.5 minutes right there, by the way, is supposed just to be economics 101, but it seems our Congress people have no understanding of whatsoever. Let's go a level deeper. Money is valuable because goods and services are represented by that money. So $100 is supposed to represent that value of goods and services in a society. Here's something that is obvious, but it needs to be said because it's true. Creating and printing more money does not make more stuff appear. Creating more money does not create more stuff. Instead, creating more money spreads the value of the goods and services amongst a larger number of dollars. So when we introduce $4 trillion into the economy without any sort of growth because everything is closed, that means that the $100 will no longer be worth $100. It cheapens the value of the currency. And then you get inflation. How do you calculate inflation? It's super easy. You guys remember back to math class? You just have a simple division equation. At the numerator, you have numbers of dollars. The denominator, you have goods and services. That's it. So on the denominator, goods and services, we have less goods and services than we've ever had before because of the lockdowns. 200,000 small businesses went under. Hotels, cruise lines, concerts, airlines, all have gone through the worst chapter they ever have. But the number of dollars has increased dramatically. So we are pumping the system with funny money. Our market is basically on a sugar high. We haven't even spent all the money that we've allocated. Yet the Democrats and Biden want to spend another $1.9 trillion. Why? Answer. There are a couple people that love inflation. We know you can't print wealth. We know you cannot create wealth via a printing press. The Weimar Republic, Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, and much of the Third World has demonstrated this. But Wall Street bankers actually love stimulus. It gives the market a false sense of stability. And also, if you're wealthy, you're going to do great when inflation hits. Hard assets, you do very well. But do you know who else does really, really well with inflation? Corporations that have massive debt. Anyone that has debt does really well when inflation hits. Let's think about it. If you have $500,000 in debt, and all of a sudden $500,000 is no longer worth $500,000, and it's really worth like $200,000 with inflated money, because it's not what it used to be. How many times have you heard your parents say, I used to be able to get a full meal for $1.50? Well, it's because $1.50 isn't worth what it used to be. $1.50 back then is really like 10 cents now, and vice versa. So therefore, inflation rewards debtors. It rewards people that have borrowed and leveraged. Well, who have borrowed and leveraged themselves to positions in an unrealistic nature? Answer: private equity, megatron corporations, and much of the ruling class. Our whole system is built on debt. Everything is. The spigot of debt has hit higher education, it's hit businesses, it's hit Wall Street, it's hit private families, credit card companies. We are leveraged all up and down the economy. And so now we are on the second precipice of a long-term debt cycle. So when you hit the second precipice of a long-term debt cycle, the smart people, the Federal Reserve, are looking at the numbers. They say, huh, we didn't cut spending in 2000. We didn't cut spending in 2005. We didn't cut spending in 2010. We didn't cut spending in 2015. And we didn't cut spending in 2020. And now the number of dollars has increased. The goods and services have decreased. That's it. We are going to admit quietly through code. You see, the ruling class always communicates through code. That one thing that you'll learn about authoritarians and tyrants, they'll never tell you bluntly, but they'll tell you through code. You want to know how they told us through code? Bill Gates is now the number one owner of farmland in the country. Trust me, Bill Gates does not like owning chickens and cows. That's code. You see, that's Bill Gates telling you, watch out, inflation is coming. Because you know the one asset that does really, really well in inflation, of course, gold and silver, land. Land does best in inflation. Why? Because there's only so much of it. It's one of the few things you can't create more of. It's one of the few things that you literally know how much land there is, especially developed land. Does that make sense why all of a sudden Biden is not allowing more expansion on federal lands? It makes pre-existing land more valuable. Because when you open up more lands for leases, all of a sudden there's more supply, and therefore prices will go down. If you take the state of Arizona, Maricopa County is hitting its limits. That's why buildings are starting to get more vertical. By the way, that is a thesis that we are going to build out. Because I'm a big believer that the more vertical we allow housing units to get, the more liberal communities become. The less you own, the more you rent, the more likely you are to be a Democrat. So the ruling class talks in code. And do you know what the monetary ruling class is telling us right now? Almost in a Morse code way. We are now going to become a country that manages inflation. Lawrence Summers has said this. And by the way, I'm no fan of Lawrence Summers traditionally, just so we're clear. He says, quote, inflationary pressures are going to come of a kind we have not seen in a generation, with consequences for the value of the dollar and financial stability. He notes that stimulus measures of the magnitude contemplated are steps into the unknown. So who does this punish? Who does inflation and this sort of debt-based fiat currency, Rhodesian Weimar Republic, Narnia-based economic system punish? The people who have played by the rules, conservatives. If you have saved money your whole life, if you have paid down your debt, if you have not leveraged yourself through credit card bills, this entire program is designed to punish you. But if you have leveraged yourself up to the sky, if you have borrowed money your whole life, all of a sudden this is your bailout. And that's their design. They want to punish the rule followers and reward the people that have pushed the boundaries. I've come to the realization that the modern leftist, their life's work is to be at war with nature. It's as simply as I can put it. They do not believe in the laws of economics. They don't believe in the laws of human nature either. Now, liberals are different than leftists. Liberals admit human nature is flawed. Liberals admit that human beings are not malleable. Do you want to know one of the greatest lies ever told? That we are somehow inherently better human beings just because of the technology around us than the founding fathers. We are just as broken, self-interested, greedy, and sinful as the people that predated us. Our society is better, thanks to them and the systems they gave us. But as individual human beings, we are right the same as the people that came before us. And that is one of the most deceiving narratives of the left, that somehow progress, this Hegelian dialectic progress, this history with an end sight, somehow we become better people. And the answer is, of course you don't. But in some way, it is almost as if the Democrats, when they pass these inflationary measures, especially the Cortezes, Talibs, and Omars, they believe this is the time that we're going to prove nature wrong. You hear that, God? We're going to prove you wrong. But just as I went through the very basic rules of economics, of supply and demand, the incident of wants problem, it's no different than the laws of Newtonian physics. It's no different than the laws of gravity. It's no different than the laws of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics, I believe, is the law of inevitable decay. The left is just interested in that. The left doesn't care about that. The left believes that with the right combined collective genius, which takes pride to believe that, with enough power, they can overcome the laws of nature. We're Democrats. They haven't seen anything yet. And it's this perpetual push of liberals and Democrats that are almost resisting the guardrails, the rules, the laws, the facts, the biology, and the science that dictate our society. And people say all the time, Charlie, what is a conservative? I say a conservative is very simple. Someone who recognizes human nature, who doesn't fight it, and instead tries to use the worst of human nature for the betterment of the entire society. Instead, conservatives say we should try to create good people, not try to change how people actually are inherently. That people are going to slip up, people are going to fall, people are going to sin. Instead, what kind of a society can we have to teach people how to be, not what to destroy, like the left does? And so when the left passes these stimulus bills, they're doing the exact same thing as when they're fighting for the transgender stuff. The laws of biology, the laws of economics. I don't care about that. You see, this is the way America was governed before the Jacques Derrida, Michel Foucault, postmodernist left came onto the scene. America was governed when you had a Democrat Party and a Republican Party that actually agreed on some very basic things. The laws of nature and nature's God. The laws of economics. The laws of physics. The law of thermodynamics. And so then when you have those kind of agreed upon givens, then public policy will stay within the framework of not destroying your civilization. But when all of a sudden you say math, science, all of that are white Western power structures, well, then of course you're going to be at war with God and his nature. It's exactly what is driving the pathological left. Because they can't possibly believe there might be a creator above them in the hierarchy of needs, wants, and power. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. Email us your thoughts on this episode, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you're a high school, college student, or even a parent, and you want to support Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.